It is February 5th, 2011, Saturday, 10 a.m. on the Central Coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, Geek News, and in the second half, we'll have your questions and comments about technology.
The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com.
It's time now for Geek Speak. Oh, yes, I got the theme song right again. Yeah, mm-hmm. The funny part is that I don't even see that I've done anything wrong here.
At least it's a perfect
record. Yeah, so now you can make fun of me as I... Because, see, everything is playing, and I have absolutely no idea right now why it's not making sound.
Air between monitor and keyboard? Or
air sound, between keyboard soundboard and chair. And yeah. chair.
Monitor and keyboard, yeah. I got that wrong.
You know, we should just add the theme song in the podcast, and so we have such a big podcast listenership, nobody will ever know. Of course, yeah, now that
that's
I
true.
Said
I
that.
Know. We're through with being cool. We're through with being cool. Eliminate the ninnies and the twists.
Yeah, so Dr. Don Matika is sitting here with her.
Yeah, I'd like to thank Devo for that wonderful song that's been used by us for many a time. And I swear, I got everything... hooked up. It's a problem with the technology this time. It's not my fault.
Yes. Don's like, these are the people who follow me?
It's this old equipment we're using.
Yeah, that's
yes,
true.
It's totally the old equipment.
That's what it is.
So yeah.
It is actually
old
equipment.
Did you put coal in that mixing board?
Oh, I forgot.
You're supposed to add the coal before we start. You can't add it now.
I thought we could breathe easier this morning.
Yeah. Usually it's just choking smoke in here.
Yeah. You don't know how much black lung we get here mm-hmm. over at KUSP.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, quite a bit. Mm-hmm.
We could use some new equipment, that's for sure.
Yeah. So, Al?
Yeah?
I noticed that you have 3 stitches above your eye.
Yes, you did notice that.
Yeah.
Yes, that happened last night. It's funny you should ask that.
Yes. What happened?
Well, I'll tell you what happened. I had my whip rope, and I was, swinging around, and I was swinging across a giant tank filled with giant man-eating sharks. There was a baby. A baby was crawling on the rim of the tank, and the baby fell in the tank. I, of course, let go of my rope, did a perfect jackknife dive into the water with very little splash, went down, fought the sharks off with my bare hands. Got the baby out. I grabbed it, swam to the top, just like a porpoise. I flew right out of the water and landed right on the rim of the thing, jumped down, handed the baby to a very grateful mother. And then after that, I just sat down to rest because my heart was pumping, and I reached over to pet my little new puppy, Blake, and he scratched me in the eye.
Wow, no even fade out for that one. Just like, story's over.
That was it. What? I got scratched by my puppy.
I missed the large function.
Ended up with 3 stitches in my eye last night.
Can you tell that story?
It's above my eye.
And with that, welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Miles Elam. Please keep in mind the views expressed during Geek Speak are not necessarily those of KUSP. In the air room with me are Al Lookow, new media architect.
Hi, everybody.
And Ben Jaffe, freelance media guy and Stanford instructor.
Good morning.
So, without further ado, let's start off with, I see death in our future.
Yes, quite a bit of death. So, I have 2 brief stories that deal with death. One is a 19-year-old made a homemade solar death ray. This kid, 19-year-old kid named Eric Jacquemain, who was a student, took 5,800 mirrors and put them on this parabolic dish. Or actually, I guess it wasn't parabolic. It was elliptical. And created a focus point so he can just point this thing at objects and they just poof. They just explode, right?
Wow.
It's effectively the power of 5,000 suns, which is, I would say, pretty intense. Huh. And I remember when I was in school, I kind of wanted to do this, but I decided, you know what, that would be too dangerous. I don't know, just making this dish and you point it at something and it just poof, mm-hmm. explodes. But there is a ray of hope. This teenager was wearing safety goggles. So if that's any indicator, hopefully that means he's being responsible with it. Anyway, kind of cool.
By the way, what you're talking about is actually something that my girlfriend's father works with. Mm-hmm. A solar cooker is actually how he refers to it, rather than a solar death ray. But, you know, that's fine. It's a great way to cook some food, as long as it's a sunny day, warm sunny day.
Also, I didn't think about this until just now, but I think death ray is a misnomer, because it's not a ray where anything that gets in the path of the ray gets cooked. It's a focal point, right? Because it's creating an ellipse, and ellipses have two foci. And Man, I knew I was going to get something wrong, and Miles is going to correct me, and I'm just so embarrassed. No, but that second focus point, all of the energy that hits the array all goes and is concentrated in that little focus point. Of course, the more accurately you place these mirrors, the stronger and more tightly controlled that not beam, but that focus point of energy.
It couldn't
is.
Be called a death ray, though, because even though it has a specific focal point, you still have rays of photons going out, as opposed to a laser. A laser wouldn't be, because lasers are all photons going in the same direction.
It's more like a death ray.
Don't have a single focal point. They can just go in essentially a straight line.
It's more like a death cone.
Yeah, it's kind of like it is a death cone. I mean, I don't know if I would consider something a ray. Call that a death ray, even if it was all going in one general direction, but there was only one small portion of the ray that could cause any harm at all.
Didn't they call it a death ray with Archimedes trying to burn down enemy ships back in the Mythbusters tried doing that test. Where you focus all these mirrors onto some ships and try to burn them up, and they got pretty close, but it didn't seem like it was effective militarily.
What kind of distance are we talking about with this kid's?
Not very far. Like, you can hold this thing and then reach out your other arm and burn something.
Depending upon the accuracy of the mirrors that you put on there, the distance doesn't. Well, I guess it matters somewhat, because you'll have some scattering in the scattering of light within the air. Yeah. But at the same time,
it doesn't impact.
It's
strength.
A question of where your focal point is. It doesn't. Especially if you're within, 10 feet of that array of mirrors, it doesn't matter if you're right up next to it and has a really mm-hmm. tight focal point close up, you know, only a couple inches away versus 3 feet away. It's still a lot of solar radiation coming down at the same point.
Yeah. My other brief story about death and destruction, I'm sure a couple of our listeners have heard of Apophis, which is the asteroid which is going to pass extremely close to Earth in 2029. And Neil deGrasse Tyson has a fantastic lecture that everyone should watch. It's just the way he delivers this. He's been on The Daily Show and Colbert Report. And
yeah, the way he delivers it makes you think we're all going to die.
Yeah, exactly. It's like death from the skies.
But we're not going to die.
We're not going to die.
It's not going to hit us.
Exactly. It's going to get close. But it's not going to hit us. But the cool thing in this particular story, which I'll submit up to geekspeak.org, is that it gives us a really good opportunity to get a close look at an asteroid like this, right? So it's a type of asteroid. It's called a chondrite. So it has a really high silicate content, a couple other metals. And it's relatively large. I mean, it's 330 meters wide across, and that's pretty big. I mean, not compared to the kind of thing Miles is like, that's not big. But
no, I was actually thinking, yeah, it's pretty big. It wouldn't
wipe out all life on Earth necessarily.
Right,
it's
it
not
would
like
cause a nice big tsunami
dinosaur.
If it landed in the ocean. Yeah.
Huge tsunami, yeah. And again, for more on the tsunami effects of asteroids, watch Neil deGrasse Tyson's talk, and you'll be like, oh my God, we're doomed. But it's okay. It's okay. both those stories are up on geekspeak.org.
Speaking of death.
Yeah, you don't happen to have a story that has to do with death.
I happen to have a story about this. This one's called Death by GPS.
Funny that.
And this is one where, as much as we are into technology, we do have to acknowledge there's a point where reliance on technology can be detrimental to your health. And
absolutely.
How that comes about is, for example, with death by GPS, you have people looking at the GPS in their cars, increasingly in new cars out there, to say, turn right at Mm-hmm. Swiss Street, turn left at Delaware. You know,
turn right at unmarked, unpaved path.
Right. And that is happening a lot where they say turn right at this road, and it's really just this dirt path that turns into sand, and you realize, oh my God, I'm in the middle of Death Valley in the middle of summertime, in the middle of August. Or it will direct you saying, oh, the most direct path from point A to point B is over this narrow mountain road. Oh, but it's the middle of winter, so you might actually get stuck there and freeze to death.
Well, that part they don't tell you.
Right. And so, you know, yes, Google could improve their mapping technology, or Garmin in the case of the built-in ones, or something like that. But it also seems to me there's the impetus upon the human species to be able to say, that map looks like it's taking me through Death Valley in the middle of August. I don't think that that's a good idea.
Right.
I don't think that my car will take me through that 130 degree stretch of land, and that I have enough gas to get through the whole thing. And if I end up with a flat tire, that I'll be able to fix it in sufficient time. And
before I bake to death.
Right. And most likely out in the middle of that winter, you know, pass going up over the mountains, your cell phone might not work.
Yeah, right. You still have to use your brain, I guess.
Right.
Just can't get out of that.
So being a geek is not all about just using the technology that's available. It's about using your brain and applying it to the technology.
Yeah. I actually...
Public service announcement from KUSP and GeekSpeak. Moving on.
That's pretty good.
So let's talk about technology and our reliance on that.
Yeah. I can talk about a time I didn't use my brain, which was a couple days ago. I don't know if anybody's aware that there's a little thing going around on Facebook. Beware of stalkers. Check how many people have seen your album, your photo album on Facebook. Click here to find out. You know, well, duh. You know, I don't know. You know, I should know better. You know, but I clicked on this thing. And, of course, what it does is it just sends the thing out to all of your friends and says, hey, check out who you are. Hi, I'm Al. I tried out this application. Go ahead and try it. Click. You know, and so basically it does it to everybody. So,
by the way, the way that they would be able to tell that people are looking at your profile to see that activity, to see what's going on, they would have to have access to your account.
Right.
Which means that, and this is something to know about Facebook, we've talked about it before, but every time you click on an ad or you click on a game, that game or advertising organization has access to your profile and your list of friends. So it has access to everything that you have access to see.
Yes, and the thing is, the application does have a point. I mean, it does come across as sort of a scam. You're thinking, oh, why? I didn't know it was going to do all that. You know, they weren't really for it. But apparently, it does do a few things. It uses your last 200 Facebook interactions, and then averages that to find out who you've been interacting with most. So basically, it's nonsense information. It's based on a number of factors. What the developer says. You know, wall posts and comments, etc. And they just weigh them differently. And it basically doesn't tell you anything. But so when you see this in Facebook, don't click on it, because it's just going to make you look uncool like I did. And I was that guy in Death Valley and said, oh, this is the shortest path. You know, it's one of those things. Anytime something you get one of those applications in Facebook, you know, typically you just don't want to click on it. You know, that's my policy. It isn't, at least right now.
Or rather, think of it as those ads you see with regard to or some shop says, hey, put in your business card to be able to win a raffle.
Yeah.
That means they're getting your contact information.
Yeah.
Or
free iPad.
Right, online where it says free iPad. You just need to sign up for this contest and you'll have a chance to win. It's true. You do have a chance to win. Mm-hmm. But you also have your email address farmed out to a lot of third parties, because that's how they make the money to pay for the iPad to give you for free.
Yeah. If that ever happens, I doubt that, you know, I question whether that ever actually happens.
Whether someone actually gets an iPad?
Yeah. I mean, it just doesn't, you know.
Well, it says you do, right?
Yeah.
I would think the amount of money you get from to buy an iPad to actually give it out to one person out of the thousands that will have, or tens of thousands, who knows, that
fill it in.
I'm sure they make more than that money
probably
on the
right.
venture. So. Yeah.
I also did something stupid on Facebook and fell for one of those scams as well, which kind of led to my general departure from Facebook, and now I just don't use it anymore. But and this sounds kind of embarrassing, but I promise I have a good explanation. The one that I fell for was Justin Bieber related. And I have to say that if there's one thing that I don't understand on the internet, it's why Justin Bieber is such a big deal. I didn't really know who he was, what the deal was. I didn't know that he was like 12 or whatever.
I think he's 16. That was a big deal. Like, he published his memoirs.
Oh, geez.
You didn't get those?
No, I didn't. Were they through Facebook? And
we don't need to be bashing on him now. We're positive on this show.
Yes.
Absolutely. Except self-deprecating. So I clicked on this stupid thing, and of course it sent that out to everyone. And so I immediately rectified the situation through a lot of browsing to other friends' profiles and removing posts that it had made. And
so it sent to all your friends, hey, yeah. I just found out more about Justin Bieber or Bieber or whatever his name is.
Be something. Anyway, yeah. So it was just
teenager really, who shall not be named.
Yes.
And it was really just out of like, I think I need to learn who this Justin Bieber person is, because everyone talks about him on the internet, so he must be important, right?
Yes.
And that was my first mistake. No.
Because not everything you read on the internet is A, true, or B, important.
Exactly.
And they get you, eventually, they got us, you know. they'll get you, you know, somehow. Yeah.
So let's hear about black holes?
Yes, indeed. I have a fantastic story about this. So at stephenbrooks.org, I guess this guy did a bunch of renderings about what it would look like if you had a black hole in between, let's say, you and some galaxy or something like that. So there's this picture of this humongous, glorious, gorgeous galaxy, and there's this little dot in the middle of it. But the coolest thing about this is that he didn't just render this once from one distance, right? The first one is from 500 times the Schwarzschild radius of the black hole. So what that means is that point, the event horizon you hear about, from which not even light can escape with a black hole, right? Once you get that close, that is actually a sphere around the black hole. It has a radius. And if you take that width of the radius, that's kind of how we're measuring the distance from the black hole. So he rendered out a computer-generated image of this from 500 times the radius of the black hole, and it's a very small little point. And then from 50 times the radius of the black hole distance, it's a much larger point, right? But the really cool thing about this is when you get really close to it, because you would think, okay, well, if you're getting close to, let's say, something that's spheroid, like a star or a planet, right, it just kind of increases like normal, right? But here's the catch. If you were to send, let's say, a laser beam right near the black hole, not through it, but near the black hole, and it would go by the black hole, the light itself would actually be bent around the black hole.
Gravitational lensing,
exactly. And the best metaphor I could think up for describing this is, let's say that you're floating looking at the Earth, and you're floating, let's say, some relatively large distance away from the Earth. If you take a tennis ball and you throw it really hard, then you can throw it some distance away from the center of the Earth, so it'll actually orbit around the Earth and hit a point on the other side, right? Does that make some sense? So you get this gravitational lensing effect. And if you do that with light, you end up with a black circle where no light is escaping from the black hole. And then you can see right where the event horizon is, all of this light that's being captured from random parts of the galaxy and being wrapped around the black hole, and then ends up in your camera lens or your eye. But this gets really crazy when you get really close. So let's say that you're floating towards the Earth, and now you're really close to the Earth. Now, in order to get this tennis ball around the Earth, you're not throwing it off to the side. You're actually throwing it away from the Earth, kind of in an arc like that, you know? And so as you get closer to the black hole, this happens with light. So as you move closer and closer and closer, the black hole appears to engulf you. And this is actually before you even reach the black hole's event horizon. we rely on light to tell us what's going on around us and where things are, but you can't do that when the thing that you're trying to observe is bending the light that you're using to observe it. And so when what eventually happens is as you get really close to this black hole, like let's say 1.025 times the Schwarzschild radius away from the black hole, almost to the event horizon, the entire universe actually, instead of being kind of in front of you, the black hole kind of engulfs you and occupies more than half of your field of vision, and the entire universe and all the light from it ends up disappearing behind you in a speck. And so as you're falling into this black hole, you see the entire observable universe wrap around you in this bizarre way and then squish into this sphere and slowly disappear, right?
Gives new meaning to the term, you know, world revolves around you.
Yeah, indeed. At least it appears that way. I give you a courtesy laugh. Check out this link on geekspeak.org. There are incredible pictures, and they're really beautiful. And one last point on this. I was talking to my friend about this last night. He actually sent me the link. And he was saying there's something really poetic and beautiful about the fact that because of relativity, and you can read more about this if you want, but because of the way time slows down when you're in intense gravitational wells like that within a black hole, as you fall into a black hole, you see the entire universe age around you to infinity right before you die, and then you're in the black hole. It's just kind of funky and crazy, right? So my point is the universe is beautiful, science is beautiful, math is beautiful, and check out these images. They are completely beautiful.
See, you say science is beautiful, and yet you're apparently not the only opinion out there. In India, the Bombay High Court recently made a ruling that says that astrology is science. Now,
astrology.
We've talked about this before. Not astronomy, astrology. So talking about, you know, Cancer, Virgo, Pisces, that this is a firm science, which, you know, we can get into about reasons why, but we're not going to right now. And the reasoning given was that the science behind astrology is more than 4,000 years old. Ergo, it must be true.
What?
It must be applicable.
It's tradition, therefore it's right?
Exactly. Can you guys give me some other examples of if a longstanding thought process or tradition?
Well, we used to build pyramids and sacrifice people on the top, and that's very, very old.
Wait.
It's been around a really...
So sacrificing to gods.
To the gods it's got to be 4,000 years old, right?
Al, that's not true. We didn't build the pyramids. Aliens built the pyramids. So
oh, that's right. Never mind.
Right,
forget that.
That thought process has only been around for about 50 years.
Oh, no.
I see. That's
your
not
point.
Science. Because that's only 50 years.
Right.
Huh. That's really... I don't know. That seems like bulletproof reasoning to me.
Yes. Yeah. I
alchemy has been practiced for a very long time.
Alchemy is?
Yeah, alchemy is transmutation of materials, mm-hmm. that big quest to turn lead into gold.
Right.
Through, you know.
That should be, since it's so old, it should be declared a real science.
It is a real science. I mean, we're talking about something. That's some old.
What about preparing people
technology
for the afterlife by mummification? That's very old.
Or the afterlife. We know that the afterlife itself exists because
people have believed in that, or, you know, the mummification and you put your possessions with you and all that.
Because, you know, in the next life, you need that cash.
This astrology thing makes total sense.
So should we be buried with our debit cards? Is that a...
I don't want my debit card, but, you know, some of the stuff I bought, maybe.
Okay. So yes, if you were in India... have fun with the science that is astrology.
Yes.
Moving on. We are at our midpoint.
Ooh.
So I'm going to let the audience know that you're listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. The geeks today are Al and Ben. Geek Speak on KOSP is supported by Home and Small Business Tech, providing IT support to businesses, tech support for home computers. Home and Business Tech specializes in protecting data and have been providing data storage, recovery, virtualization, and maintenance for over 10 years. HASBtech.com. You are listening to Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP, and we are taking calls from our listeners. The phone numbers are locally at 831-476-2800, or you can call us toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. You can handle, I guess, quite a few calls. If you want to rewire your house, probably have to hold off until Lyle gets back. Unfortunately, he's out sick. But in the meantime, once again, those phone numbers are 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. And I believe we're back to... Yeah, who's up next?
GeekBit.
Oh, GeekBit. GeekBit.
GeekBit. I have a GeekBit for those of us with Android phones. There's a really fantastic application I just noticed yesterday, actually, and I have since bought it, and it's made me waste tons of time. It's actually a game I enjoy. It's called X Construct, and it lets you build bridges for trains with, like, girders and wire rope and everything like that, and it'll actually simulate the physics there in the game. So you build this bridge, this truss bridge or whatever you want to build. You press the little play button and the train tries to cross the bridge. And of course, like, if you build a really bad bridge, then you hear all these creaking sounds and everything like that. And then if you fail, then the train falls and the people all scream and it's just very high stakes. Like that. There you go.
So, well, definitely more entertaining. I'm curious. This is like the digital version of a Rector set.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering, like, which one is better? The one where you have the feedback to know that the train is falling and people are dying, you know, the consequences that way, or the fact that you are working with something physical like an Erector set to put things over to see how strong your structure is.
You know, it'd be really fantastic if we could find some way to merge the two, where you could build a Erector set and have a little train push your toy train over, and then you see the little Erector set pieces stress red when they're giving all the stress, and then they break, and then the train falls, and...
Oh,
and then you
times,
you have to make the
times.
Sound of the people screaming yourself as a kid, you know. Oh, no, help me.
Well, let's see here.
Do we have phones?
Yes, we do have a phone call. I'm wondering if you want to do another couple set of... No, let's take the phone calls. That's fine.
Why not?
So let's take call on... I'm told it's on line 3, but it seems like...
Line 1.
No, it seems like it's on line 3, but it's told line 1. I don't think there's anyone on line 3 right now.
Huh. Well, we can see if we get a busy signal on line 1.
Yeah, let's see how this works out. Hello. Is this Rosalie?
No.
No.
Steve?
No, I'm trying to get on Geek Speak.
Yes, you are on Geek Speak. So I guess we've bypassed our screener here. I think we lost our initial call. So we'll take yours. I'm sorry, what was your name?
Steve.
Okay, so...
I had a question. My daughter came home from college. I got her an iMac, and what it started doing was on the side of the screen, she got like a line, vertical line coming down, and now it's progressively adding more lines to the screen. Sometimes she'll turn it on, and like one, maybe a quarter or a fifth of the screen will be like blank.
Is this sort of like a big flat iMac, or is it the older model iMac, the big round one? So it's the flat one?
It's a flat one, yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like a video card issue.
A video card issue? Okay.
It's, I'm not sure of Apple's policy on that. If you have, you know, if you bought the insurance, you probably have that. I mean, there's, but they do have a standard fee for fixing a monitor. Like, even if you just totally messed something up really bad on laptops, you can bring your laptop in.
Yeah, it's not cheap, though.
Yeah, I don't know. If it's one of those nice iMacs, those big screen ones. A lot of that stuff, you know, I would talk to the Genius Bar, because there's a lot of weird warranty issues in there and stuff that you may be able to get that fixed. If something like that happens, It's worth checking out because you may be able to get it fixed for free or a discounted rate. But,
okay.
You know, a video card issue is, you know, sometimes resolvable, you know. It doesn't mean it's... Is the thing not working in any other way?
No, it works fine otherwise.
It's, yeah.
It's the lines, and then they progressively been getting across. And probably, yeah. I'd say probably maybe it's 3 or 4 years old.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it could... I mean, that kind of stuff could be loose wire. I mean, there's a lot of things. Uh-huh. You know.
Oh, okay. So who'd you say you get a hold of?
The Genius Bar. Are you local here?
Any Apple store.
Yeah, any Apple store.
Any Apple store.
There's one in Los Gatos.
Okay. All right, great. Thanks for the advice.
Thank you for the call. Uh-huh. Okay, let's try line one. Is this Rosalie?
Yes.
Yes. Rosalie. Wonderful.
You're on Geek Speak.
Okay. So do you want me to repeat what my problem is here?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay, I have an iPod Nano, and it came with no instructions, and I'm not a real computer-savvy person. So I had a friend of mine download music for me onto my iPod Nano. Well, she downloaded it on an iMac, and I have a Windows. And so when she brought it back to me, I thought, oh, it needs to be charged. And I plugged it into my computer, and it told me I had to...
initialize it.
Or erase everything.
Yep.
To be able to... So I thought, okay, well, then what I'll do... I went out and bought a charger for my iPod. Mm-hmm. And but apparently it's locked. There's... When I turn... You know, when I plug it, it's charged, and I can't play it.
Well, there's on the Nano. I think there's a hard switch to lock it. It's a little switch on the top of the side that is the if it's the physical lock. And when you first buy one of those devices like a Nano, and you hook it up to a computer, it thinks that computer is the mothership. And so your friend's iMac to that Nano is, you know, that's mommy. Okay,
right.
And it's always going to think that. And if you plug it into your machine. Your machine is going to say, well, I don't know who this is. It's a stranger. So you have the choice of saying, well, erase, you know, this and reinitialize, or just use it to charge. Now, if the way to really do this, if you want to use your own computer, is to just get the music from her, like on a USB drive or something, like a little flash drive or burned to a CD.
It will only work if it's an MP3 that isn't keyed. For example, if you buy something from the...
Digital
iTunes
rights
store.
Management.
Yeah, if you buy something from the iTunes store, you can't share it easily
well,
like that.
You can share it with a number of devices. So
my question is, I'd like to keep the music I have on here. Can I use my daughter's iMac to unlock this, or does it get unlocked at my friend's?
To get that music off, there's a couple ways. One of them is to just ask your friend to put the music on a CD or something as MP3s, and then just load it into, you know, download iTunes for Windows, and just load it into your own thing, which is what probably was going to work the best. The other way is there's probably dozens of applications out there that will access your iPod, and they're kind of gray area kind of applications, but they exist. You know, I mean, I look at them as there's probably a few free ones. There's probably some that are like $10 or something.
Yeah. And there's also the more expensive, straightforward answer, which is you can always go to the iTunes store and rebuy the music.
Yeah.
Or actually,
right. Well, I have my daughter uses my computer, and she's downloaded a lot of music onto my computer. So let me go back to my original question. So in order to unlock my iPod to be able to play it, do I need to do that with my friend's computer?
Well, it should play. You can put
it won't play.
You mean you put your earbuds in and you go outside jogging?
I plug it in. Uh-huh. Okay, I'll plug it in. I have it. I plug it in and it lights up, and I can't play it. It won't move.
It just so look for a switch on the side. It's a hard switch. It's a little.
There's no switch on the side. This is the little pink.
Oh, this is the very new one. Yeah, the wearable one.
8 gigabyte. And so there's no switches.
Huh.
Well, wait a minute. Okay. Okay. You got it.
You found it? Okay. Yes. Yeah, switch that.
It's unlocked.
Uh-huh.
Thank you.
Uh-huh. There you go.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you for the call.
Yep.
Bye. Bye.
It's always the little things that get you, you know? Yeah. It's the missing semicolon when you're programming or, you know, all those things.
I'll tell you, I've looked
at code.
Wait,
you miss semicolons?
Oh, I don't miss semicolons.
You know, I looked at code for hours, you know, doing HTML programming and stuff like that, and you know, just couldn't figure out what problems were, and I had my wife look at it for, like, you know, 10 seconds. And she's like, you're missing a semicolon. You know, it's just, you know, so it are those little things, you know, and I think sometimes you just are tuned into them. Sometimes you're not.
Yeah. You know? Every programmer has had these instances. Everyone in any field has had this. But for programmers, it's very much this, I'm doing everything wrong. There's nothing wrong with this code. Why is it not working? There's the libraries aren't, and you're just, no, there's a problem with the compiler. The compiler is broken.
Yeah.
Like, you know, something is wrong with the computer. There's something outside of my, and you curse and scream, and you're just like, and you're totally frustrated, and you're working on it for a long time, and then finally you do something that seems unrelated, and you're like, hey, it suddenly worked. Wait a second. You go back and look. Oh, I needed that extra parentheses.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I needed that. Uh-huh. It was a single equal sign instead of a double equal sign. Oh, it was.
For me, it's very often closing quotes inside of HTML tags because your code highlighting tools won't really show you very much of a difference because the close bracket closes it anyway. So anyway, fun stuff.
Yeah, it's one of the things actually you learn from programming is it's always your fault. With computers in general, you just kind of go, it's always your fault. Yeah. You just have to figure out what it is and just have to learn that humility. Mm-hmm. You're not as smart as you thought you were. Yeah. So, who's next? Is it Ben or is it Al? I think it's Al. Okay, so.
Al's like, me.
Pick me.
I have a kind of a robot story. It's sort of neat. There's, you know, there's certain cases where has to do with babies and robots. And in many cases, there's the disabled babies who are unable to get around to explore their environment like other babies. And it's very important for them to do that. And a company, researchers from Ithaca College, they created a robot that travels in whatever direction a baby leans. So the baby gets on this thing. It's basically a Wii Fit balance board perched atop a Pioneer 3 robot platform. So it's almost like a little Segway for a baby, and it doesn't go very fast. And all the baby has to be able to do is to lean one way or the other, and the thing just goes where the baby goes. Now, of course, we're like, what? That's crazy. You know, well, there is a joystick override for the parent, you know, so you can have that. I mean, they've kind of thought this thing through.
Protecting the drywall when the baby just goes up against the wall and thinks,
oh, this doesn't hurt.
Yeah. But, you know, it's great for babies that just, you know, they don't really have the ability to get around, but most of them have the ability to lean one way or the other. So from that standpoint, I think it's a really good use of a robot. It's sort of like a...
So it still builds the ability for the baby to learn and have that knowledge of motor skills translating to movement and spatial reasoning.
They can go places. They can explore. You know, it sounds like a pretty neat idea.
Definitely.
Yeah. So I'll have a link to that on geekspeak.org. Just like all of the stories you hear today, we'll have links after the show on our show page at geekspeak.org, including I have a little note on how to unlock nanos and stuff like that. So all these articles will be available after the show.
Thank you, Al. Mm-hmm. And we still have an empty phone bank. So if you want to call in, 476-2800 or 800-655-5877, you can join the conversation with the geeks. And, you know, it's always more interesting when we have it be a collaborative effort. In the meantime, some more news from Ben.
Yeah, so I found this fantastic video from 1994. Yes, we remember the days. Well, everyone but me, at least. I'm too young. See, I made the youth joke before Miles could.
Yeah, he's quick.
Yeah, I know. I'm
well,
quick.
You know, he's really young and inexperienced, so of course he's going to be doing that. I take a little bit longer as I get older.
Yeah. You should do an old joke now.
Okay, so moving on. So 1994. There was a video. There's a video of the Today Show. What is the internet anyway? Is what it's called, and it's actually Katie Couric
That's Brian Gumbel.
Brian Gumbel. Yeah, Katie Couric and Brian Gumbel talking about this thing that they heard about called the internet. And so I'm just going to play a quick audio excerpt
from this
video.
And this is from 1994?
It's from 1994.
So basically the year before it went public.
And this is right before, this is right after they showed up on the screen an email address where people could actually email them on the at the Today Show. So here's that clip. YouTube is thinking.
As opposed to that little tease. Oh, that little mark with the A and then the ring around it.
At.
See, that's what I said. Mm-hmm. Kay said she thought it was about.
Yeah. Oh.
But I've never heard it. I've never heard it said. I'd only seen the mark, but never heard it said. And then it sounded stupid when I said it. Violence at NBC.
Yeah, I heard it around or about in the lunchroom.
See, there it is. Violence at NBCGE.com. I mean...
Well, what Allison should know.
What is internet anyway?
Internet is that massive computer network. The one that's becoming really big now.
What do you mean? That's big? How does one... What do you write to it? Like mail?
No, a lot of people use it and communicate. I guess they can communicate with NBC writers and producers. Allison, can you explain what internet is?
It's pretty fantastic.
I love it.
So that's the news story. I just wanted to share a blast from the past. What is internet? Did you write to it?
And that was, what, 17 years ago?
That was, yeah, it was not long ago.
Wow.
It was 17 years ago. Hmm. It was January 24th. So, yeah, it was about 17 years ago in like 10 days or something.
So less than 20 years ago, everything that we know today in terms of, oh, well, I'll just Google that or just like search on it or I'll be able to, you know, send you some email, just go on the web and look up information, let's check this out on YouTube. Like, all of that wasn't even a twinkle in anyone's eye. Like it was...
Well, maybe like three people.
Right.
Yeah. And it's amazing. I mean, we were using what we now call sneaker nets, where you take something, you put like a floppy disk or some kind of storage medium into one computer, you transfer something onto it, you take it out, and then you sneaker net it over. You walk
right,
it with
you
your
over
sneakers
to the next computer, yeah.
To the next computer, and you plug it in. So, pretty fantastic stuff.
That's great.
Wonderful. Well, we do have a call, and I believe this is Don in Santa Cruz. Hello, you're on Geek Speak.
Hi, this is Don. Okay, I have a challenge for you guys.
All right, hit us.
Okay. If you weren't able to play the theme song today, how did you play the ominous music in the background of the story about how one of you saved the baby in the water?
Well, I can explain that.
It's all an act.
You know what? It's highly complicated how I did it, but I anticipated the technical problems today. So what I did was I stretched one of our microphones over and stretched it right down in front of the speaker of my Mac. And I didn't take any chances. And that's how Ben did his thing, too, just now.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Our equipment is, you know, I mean, it is professional radio equipment. We're in a normal radio studio, but it is showing its age a bit.
Yeah, it does
old
need
professional
some
radio
updates. And just to show you that it would be possible for me to play the theme song, you know, here we...
There it is.
I'm convinced.
He was ready. It was all ready. Everything was supposed to work perfect.
I'm very impressed.
I am still not convinced that it was my fault this time.
Well, I'm going to give you all the credit in the world.
Yeah.
This is the kind of phone call you get when you beg for phone calls.
Yeah. Makeshift.
Okay, I'll see you.
Thank you for that call.
Bye-bye. Miles has that same program mentality he was just decrying people have, you know? It's not my fault, really.
No, seriously, I've gone back through. I had it connected up to the correct port. I had it on my laptop. My laptop, the
and
volume
did,
was up.
And you did nothing wrong. Nothing
RCA,
at all.
I had the RCA in potted up. I had AB turned on. Like nothing else there.
This time you hit the on button?
Yes, it was
unlike
on.
Last time.
Yes,
when nothing
exactly,
was wrong,
exactly.
But then you didn't.
Well, that's when right after you finished setting that, you said nothing could go wrong now. I think that was the problem.
Yeah, clearly
that was it. Fate intervened. Have you checked your astrology thing for
is
today?
Is there a semicolon button on this board?
Maybe it's that missing quote.
So let's take a call from Chris in Gilroy. Chris, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. I have an older Windows machine running XP, and I use it. I'm a cabinet maker, and I use it with a CAD program at work. And I know that my computer, I have an older laptop, is going to die soon, and I want to upgrade to a new computer, but I don't want to learn a new program, and I don't want a new operating system. And I was wondering, you know, what's the best way to go about that? Because I know they all come with Windows 7 or whatever.
Which version of Windows do you have right now?
I have XP.
Okay.
You have your old installer disks?
What's that?
You have your old install disks?
I'm not certain. I might, yeah.
I mean, you know, why not just buy an, you know, XP was a really rock solid OS. I mean, as far as Windows goes, in my personal opinion, and
I've heard great things from Windows 7. I do have to say.
Okay.
So, but it's not a,
XP was, it was great. I mean, it was, they had made many mistakes, and at the very last version, it actually kind of worked, you know?
Yeah, XP Service Pack 3 and stuff like that. Yeah.
So,
but there are some security updates that have been made since then. XP is going to not be supported that much longer. It is a 10-year-old operating system, or pretty close.
Yeah.
So another option for you is if you have Windows 7, if you get the Professional Edition, then you can download a virtual PC, and so you can have XP for free inside of a virtual machine, and that would allow. It's called XP mode. So any programs that would be compatible with XP would run in an XP machine, basically, on your Windows 7 box.
Just make sure if you get a new machine, get a nice size hard drive on it.
Which isn't that hard. No. I mean, any new machine is going to be bigger hard drive than it has already, more RAM, stuff like that. Windows 7 doesn't actually cut you off from that.
If I were to start up the program, then it would just automatically jump into that XP mode. I wouldn't have to...
We don't have Lindsay today. She could have been able to answer this question for us. I'm going to be transitioning to Windows 7 soon, but I haven't had that much...
I would think you'd have to install it within that environment and then open the environment. And normally, you know, I think Macs did that with classic mode, but that was sort of rare. That's a weird thing. Like, normally, if you're going to open up a new OS, you have
to,
like...
But I think they do a fairly good, seamless job, actually, of having it map the drives over so that you can launch it up and it can actually read your standard operating... or your standard files folder, but...
I mean,
once again, we're not. Unfortunately, you hit us on the day when we don't have our Windows 7 gurus.
But you know, the other thing is that you know, time is marches on and things improve. And in a way, you know, you can cling to these old things, but ultimately, you're just going to have to.
Now, the thing is, though, he doesn't. With Windows 7, you as long as he has Professional Edition, the Pro Edition, that is a little bit more expensive than the Home, but than Home Premium. But at the same time, any programs you had that relied upon XP that aren't compatible with Windows 7, because it may be that your program will run on Windows 7.
Yeah, maybe,
but if it doesn't, there is still that XP mode, and that is fairly certain that will work. If your program worked in XP now, it would work in that XP mode for Windows 7.
With the time marching on thing, I sometimes feel that if it keeps marching on and I can continue with the old XP, then I'm not going to have any problems with hackers or anything like that, because they're always looking at the future.
That is absolutely not the right way to think of it. Yeah. If someone's still running Windows 98, for example, there are holes in Windows 98 that can be immediately exploited, and they would be exploited if you connected up that machine directly to the internet without a firewall in between.
And they're not going to be fixed ever.
And they will never be fixed.
They just slip in through the browser. I mean, you've got an old browser there too. So
that's true.
So XP is still being protected right now, and you'd be okay for a little while longer, but you still probably should be looking for a migration path. And if you're buying a new machine, it sounds like that migration time is now.
Now, if you wanted to stay on Windows XP indefinitely, you could, as long as that computer is not ever connected to the internet. That's another option, right? And you might need to have it connected. The other thing is you'd have to be extremely wary about bringing any kind of files into it or out of it, like even on a flash drive.
We're being extremely dire right now. It isn't to that point yet with XP.
Not right now.
But I'm talking about in 5 years.
If you're still using it 5 years from now, you know, which
is probably
even very
3 years from now. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. So. All right.
Some thoughts.
Well, that's good news. That's good information. Thank you.
But yeah, you should be fine with Windows. You should have a migration path with Windows 7. And if it doesn't work out, you may lose that cost with regard to the Windows 7 license, but you should still be able to install your old version of XP onto it. Worst case scenario.
Yeah.
Oh, so there's nothing different about the hardware itself. So it would still be able to run the newer computers would still run on XP.
They should, absolutely.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. You shouldn't. I don't know that you'd have any hardware out there that they don't make drivers for XP anymore.
Well, if you're running a virtual system, it wouldn't matter anyway.
Right. If you're running a virtual system, it doesn't matter. But if he's wiping it and starting over with a new install of XP,
right,
you should be fine actually with hardware.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Okay. Great. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you for the call.
Bye-bye.
Okay, how much time do we have? I think we have some time for another call. Let's try Cal in Santa Cruz. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I was watching some TV shows recently about super soldier things, and they can inject these little tracer or, like, you know, tracker things in them, and they can put suits on them that, like, show what their, you know, their body functions are. Like, if they're hiding and not out fighting, they can give them a zap and they can go back to work, you know. So I went out on the web and looked up some, and I found this thing called radio biotelemetry, which is about remote control of humans. I wonder if you heard anything about that.
Yes. Nothing that actually exists.
Evidently, something exists because they're talking about it on TV, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of like the same story you have with the internet. Just because it's said doesn't mean that it's true.
Yeah. Well, I'm talking about Discovery and History Channel.
Yeah, we're a ways off from that technologically. It makes for some nice science fiction. It makes for a nice story, and it can definitely, you know, get people's attention, but I wouldn't put too much stock in it.
You could certainly have things attached to you that would report biofeedback
measurements,
but they're not going to be able to control you.
Yeah, you could find out, like, for example, what someone's heart rate is, and you'd be able to know whether or not they're actually exerting themselves or whether they're sleeping, and then send a remote signal to some device that sends them electric shock. That's totally possible.
But crazy.
Right. Yeah. I don't know how well it would work for morale.
Yeah.
Quite too expensive because we already have TV and you don't even need the shock to get people to get up and buy stuff on command.
Yeah. Thank you for the call.
Yep.
All right. Bye. So.
It's a crazy world out there. You know, it's too bad you can't reuse your old computers. Keep them running.
Yeah, so this is the last chance to buy advance tickets online for KUSP Upgrade 2011 kickoff party on February 10th at the Museum of Art and History. Enjoy wine from the Santa Cruz Mountain Vineyards and appetizers from Main Street Garden Cafe. And hear from Dr. Don and the Geeks from Geekspeak, that's us, on how the Upgrade 2011 project will bring KUSP's equipment into the 21st century. A limited number of tickets will be available at the door at the higher price of $40. For more information and to purchase advance tickets, KUSP.org/upgrade2011.
That's this Thursday.
That's this Thursday.
Wow.
Now, we have a USB of the week.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You ever run across a news story that just has to be told the old-fashioned way? You run into a room wearing one of those weird hats with a press card sticking out. You run up to your desk, you rip out a sheet of paper, and you start typing. The only problem nowadays is there's no such thing as a typewriter. Well, fear not. There is such a thing. It works over USB, and it's called none other than the USB typewriter. It's a groundbreaking innovation in the field of obsolescence. There's only one catch. I think you kind of have to build it yourself, but it looks like a lot of fun. The project was developed at Hive 76 in Philadelphia. And it's worth a look if you ever think you might run across that late-breaking news scoop and you want to deliver it in an old-fashioned way. Thing looks just like a little typewriter. It's a real thing. It's a crazy USB device. And have a link to it on geekspeak.org after the show.
Thank you, Al. Geekspeak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence, and we thank the Puppet Master for its use. And this is Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP Santa Cruz. We're streaming and podcasting at KUSP.org. Car Talk will be coming up. Thank you to the geeks for joining me, Ben and Al.
Sure thing.
Yep.